Shall we begin?
You're listening to the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on HoopFeed.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. And I guess we could say that this is more of just a chat or a schmooze or whatever word you want to talk about, because we're in between things in women's basketball, between NCAA is over, USA camp is over, training camp kicks off on Sunday. A lot of news going on, a lot of things going on. So I just like to take a time like this and talk to our friend Michelle Vopel of ESPNW. Michelle, how are you today?
I'm good, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. So you came back from Vegas, and while they always limit the access to what people are going to see, it must be nice to be able to still get the juices flowing a little bit, even on the writer side of things, seeing all of this talent gathering in one place and getting ready for the WNBA season.
You're absolutely right. I think it's one thing to know the season's starting and to be talking to a lot of people on the phone, but it really does get you excited and eager to write, being able to talk to everybody in person, and that's just it's really interesting to see that many people. It's funny because I was talking to Elena Deladon, and you know, at one point she was looking around and she's like, you know, this is a pretty amazing group. And I said, yeah, this is pretty much the very best people in your profession. Most of them, or a great number of them, let's say, are right here in this building. And so it really is a fun thing to get a chance to see, and like, it's perfect for getting ready for the season to start.
You know, it's funny. People always talk about the depth the United States has and all, but you know, there's always seemed to be a position or two where you look at it and you kind of are a little skeptical about what if somebody couldn't make it and you needed to replace them, be it mostly at the center position, I would say it's been in the past. But you look at the guys that are out there in that camp now, and there really is potentially 2 to 3 teams worth of players that could play for a gold medal.
I think you're right, and I also think what you pointed out earlier is a legitimate thing, which is that as good as the Americans have been, there's been times when you could find a place where you're like, okay, they probably can't, it'd probably be bad to have an injury here because there would be a drop-off for sure. Now you're in a position where it's really every single position, if you divide into the traditional 5 positions, every single position has not just a good backup to a projected starter, but 2 or 3. And so I do feel like it's a very, very strong national team, no matter who they take. And then what's interesting is you look at the 17-year-olds and the 19-year-olds and those groups that are coming up, and there's a lot of talent with those youngsters too.
You know, it's a nice problem that USA Basketball has that you've got players like Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi, Tamika Catchings, that they want to still play. But it's really kind of mind-boggling when you think about it. If you think of somebody, say, a Skylar Diggins, who is stuck in that point guard group where you have these other players ahead of her, where she could conceivably be, you know, a 6 to 8 year pro before she's back representing USA Basketball. And that's really pretty amazing when you think about it.
It is amazing, and I think it does cause some debate. I mean, let's be honest, and there's nobody I respect more than Sue Bird, but she was sort of a little bit of a lightning rod, as much as that could happen with this topic, with the World Championships, where there were people saying, okay, hey, Sue's played on a lot of these teams, she's still a really good player, but is it time, you know, to hand off to the next generation? It is a great problem to have, but I think it's unavoidable that there wouldn't be some controversy here in terms of how long some of these players have been with the national team. We know what the response is going to be, which is that they've earned their spot and they haven't lost their spot, which I understand. But then you get into the issue, and it is unavoidable that Gino Auriemma is the coach. You know, some of these players are his players from college. So there's going to be some drama. Let's face it. There is going to be some drama, at least among the fan bases, I think, of colleges and WNBA teams when this Olympic team's picked. That doesn't mean it's going to affect them winning the gold medal, but I do think there's going to be debate about it.
No, I agree. And especially now when you do have these players having the capabilities of being naturalized and playing for other countries in the Olympics, too, if they haven't represented the USA or they don't think they're going to get to it. You get stars playing for other countries, and you know, there is no question that there is controversy that goes with it, and it is a difficult position. You know, how do you say no to a Bird, to a Taurasi, to a Catchings, if they want to play one more Olympics to go out? You know, but you know, you kind of hope you're right, that they take a back seat and say, okay, I've had enough. But, you know, I don't see it happening anytime soon with these guys. They enjoy it too much. They are still playing quality basketball, maybe not as good by that time as some of the others, but hopefully still quality. And, you know, it puts the committee in a position where they got to decide where does the line become blurred and when is it solid and they got to change it.
It's a tough position for them to be in. And I thought the World Championship brought up a lot of those questions. And it's one of those issues that's really hard to come up with, okay, what's the right answer? It's, you know, there's good points to be made on both sides. And what you said earlier about then American athletes who see, hey, Shavante Zelis is a good example.
Exactly.
I mean, she's a naturalized Croatian, which is, you know, whatever. Okay. all right, if you say so. And so she's going to be maybe playing for Croatia in the Olympics. Becky Hammon kind of, if not started this, but while she was the first high-profile person, we've had so many others who are doing this. It's tough because part of me looks at that and says, well, that's really not what the Olympics kind of are set up as. But you can look at a lot of different sports now where people from other countries come to the United States and then become Americans and compete and
right,
vice versa. It really blurs a lot of lines in terms of, you know, the quote unquote, you know, the meeting of nations, if you will, that the Olympics are. But if you look at Shavante Zelis, she's like, there's no way in the world I'm ever going to get on the U.S. Olympic team. There's just too many people in front of me, and I want to play in the Olympics. And so there we are.
Exactly.
Part of me keeps thinking the Olympic tournament is going to turn, at some point, is going to turn into, it's just going to be a big, gigantic WNBA All-Star tournament, you know, with people wearing jerseys of other countries. But it's sort of, you know, still going to be a lot of Americans, you know, on these other teams. I mean, we've already seen that start to happen, and that I think that's probably going to continue to be a trend.
I definitely think that this is a topic that's going to go on at least until the next group is chosen, and we'll continue to debate this and go over it. So we'll table this for now because Lord knows there's going to be plenty of other time in the future, and there's certainly enough other issues going on out there. I don't remember a season starting with this much crap off the court, between players deciding not to play, between the, you know, players getting married, and then before that, players having spats, and then let's throw in sexual harassment being hired as a president and team owner, and hey, let's start a season. So, so let's start with that big old elephant in the room and talk about what was your first response when you heard Isaiah Thomas, president and part owner of the New York Liberty?
There are some things, David, that you hear that are so absurd, they like bounce off your brain, and you think, okay, I must not have heard that right, or I didn't read it right. Or maybe there's a different Isaiah Thomas that they're talking about here, or I'm in an alternate universe. That's how much that struck me as being absurd. Seems even like a weak word.
Yep.
Then you start getting mad, at least I did. Then you start really being angry at the Liberty Organization and, frankly, James Dolan in particular for doing this to the league. And, you know, I'm sure his point of view is, well, you know, I'm the owner of the team, and I think Isaiah is the right answer. It is a slap in the face to the league, and it's a slap in the face to a lot of the people who've worked hard in the league to have a reputation and standards. But this is not by any means. We've seen Dolan do this before, not certainly just with the Liberty, but just in the way that he, as a sports, you know, manager of the Madison Square Garden company, doesn't seem to really care very much what people think. But that puts the league in a really difficult position, I think. And I think more than anything in the last week, that's what I've been talking to many, many people about, how difficult a position that puts the league in. And also for this to be announced a mere month before the season starting, that also adds, just makes it all the more difficult for the WNBA to deal with it.
You know, when I first heard it, you know, I had the same initial, what, you know, outrage then. And then I took a step back and I said, okay. I said, you know what, I'm all about giving people a chance. Let's hear what he has to say. Let's see what the story is. I reached out to the Liberty to ask to see if to get him for the podcast. Received no response. Not even an acknowledgement of my email. Okay, then I heard the interviews on the radio where he basically said that he didn't have anything to do with it, that he was never convicted, that this was never a problem with him, that it was an organizational problem. And the way that it was so categorically denied just really turned my stomach. You know, I could give someone a second chance on a lot of things if you own up to it. You know, in this case, man up. You know, just, you know, say, this is what I did. I learned from it. I love the women's game. I'm ready to give. I want to give it my best. To say that you didn't do any of this and force Anuka Brown to have to respond by saying, you know, I never thought I'd hear the Deflategate attorneys have to defend themselves yesterday for being biased, but to have Anuka Brown have to come out and say, this guy's just not telling the truth, when she tried to take the high road initially, I mean, this is bad. This is really, really not good. And what I don't know, and I admit that I have not had the opportunity to look it up, and maybe you do, what recourse for which of the positions? I know that ownership has to be approved, but does the league even have a leg to stand on to say that this guy shouldn't be the president?
That's the difficult thing of it. And that's why the fact that he has ownership shares is something that the league can have a say in. What you just pointed out is exactly, I have a column saying this. It hasn't been posted yet, at least when I'm talking to you right now. It's going to be, let's put it that way, because I said the exact same thing in terms of what makes this even more odious, which is there isn't any of what I would call the standard, anything from the standard redemption playbook, you know, where somebody says, look, you know, this happened, give me a second chance, I've learned. I really want an opportunity to do this. I would still be 100% opposed to Isaiah Thomas being involved in the WNBA, but I could understand where people would say, hey, let's let him have a second chance. The fact that he's in complete denial, I mean, you really have to look at this and say, this is somebody who didn't learn anything from what happened. And the person that he sexually harassed, that a jury found that he was somebody who created a hostile environment for this employee, and she was awarded $11.6 million. She ended up, you know, settling for slightly less, which was $11.5 million. That woman is in charge of NCAA Women's Basketball Championship.
Yep.
how terrible is that a position to put the league in? As much as the league and the NCAA have really, I feel like, have tried to work more together, understanding that they have mutually, they have mutual interests, clearly. And now you're putting, I mean, imagine how awkward, let's say Isaiah becomes the, you know, does become the president and a partial owner, is this, you know, which I think is a horrible, horrible thing. But if he does, what's the meetings like when Anuka Brown is talking to Laura Ritchie?
Right.
You know, I mean, you're putting the league president in a terrible position. You're putting everybody involved in the Liberty, including the women who play for the Liberty, in a terrible position. So, you know, it remains to be seen. But I think the fear is that, you know, what if James Dolan, you know, tries to take this to an extreme of saying, you know, you approve my president and you approve this, or I'm pulling out of the Liberty. I think that's always a concern. I do think it's a concern. So it's a terrible situation, and you know, it's kind of sad that, you know, we were thinking about the other situations that Laura Ritchie had to deal with earlier in this preseason as being really difficult, and then this one came in and trumped, I think, all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually thought, and I was going to bring that up next, but you did, is, you know, we've got a situation where Dolan has already made comments about he can make more money at Madison Square Garden by filling the dates with things other than Liberty basketball. You know, what are the chances that this is planned? That he's just going to, as soon as the league says no to Isaiah Thomas, he says, fine, screw you, I'm done. And closes the doors on Madison Square Garden, gives up on the Liberty like other owners have done in the past with other programs, and just says, that's it. I'm going to start using Madison Square Garden to make money in what I want to do.
That is my opinion on what is, I believe, he will probably try to do. And I base that on people I've talked to, that are close to the situation, some of their fears and concerns, which, of course, they can't go on the record about.
Right.
And when you look at, you know, everybody's talked about that for whatever reasons, and I don't know what they all are, that James Dolan has had this relationship of friendship and trust and everything with Isaiah Thomas, regardless of the fact that, you know.
I say there's pictures. I say Isaiah's got pictures. No, he's gotta.
I don't know what that is, and I haven't speculated on that. I don't know. I mean, they're friends, you know, whatever it is. He wanted Isaiah Thomas back in the fold at MSG, and it just strikes me as probably not coincidental that the Liberty ends up being what I feel like is going to be a pawn in this situation of, you know, give me. I need Isaiah, and he's going to be the one, and if he isn't, you know, then maybe I'm not going to support the Liberty anymore.
I wonder
and
what...
Again, that puts the league in a terrible position because, you know, if that ends up being what happens, if it does, that's, you know, the league is just... And that's where I also think if, again, saying if that happens... We're going to have to see something about the leadership of Adam Silver.
You know, I think that President Ritchie is sitting back saying, you know, the decision between lemon cream and cranberry chocolate for the next Girl Scout cookie was a little bit better, easier than whether, you know, what to do with Isaiah Thomas and whether I suspend two of my stars for fighting before they get married. So
yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, you know. Figuring out if Thin Mints really is still the number one choice of Americans who love Girl Scout cookies. No, you know, and not to be flip, because I'm sure that job had its challenges, but these are difficult situations. And you know, I wrote about last week that I think in terms of the Gloria Johnson and Brittany situation, I think USA Basketball missed an opportunity to say something that they should have. And I think they had a right to say it. And by that I mean, I think it would have been frankly, I think it would have been a good thing for USA Basketball to say, we're disappointed. We're disappointed that this happened. It's a privilege to play for your country. And, you know, we've spoken to Brittany about it, and we've been, you know, I mean, you could say some of those are just sort of cliche statements, but I think they needed to be made. And instead, USA Basketball basically was like, oh, we support her, and she's in good standing, and everything's okay. Really? I thought that was weak, and I thought it was not very responsible in terms of the ongoing dialogue we're having in this country about issues like domestic violence. So I think the league needs to do something. The players, I will tell you, I talk to the players that like Brittany, like Lori, are very fond of both of them individually. Everybody I talk to felt like the league does need to do something. But, you know, that's what we're waiting to see. So those are two issues that you know, President Ritchie is dealing with, and neither one of them are very easy to deal with.
I do anticipate that the league will do something about Griner and Johnson. They're going to have to. I do think you're right about that. You know, the question will become, obviously, what is enough, what is not enough, what is too much. You know, to me, you look at the size of the schedule, and, you know, I personally think about four or five games works. You know, is that sufficient in your eyes?
Yeah, and I don't know that it'll be that much, but yes, I think if it were that much, you know, I could see two or three games being possibly more what the league will end up doing. But, you know, I think a clear message has to be sent in terms of, even if you don't get into the bigger debate about domestic violence and same-sex relationships, let's say you don't get into that right now, because I don't think the league has to navigate all of that just to make a decision. I think the league can say there was arrests, there, you know, Brittany has pleaded guilty, I believe Glory's case that's still in adjudication right now. You know, the fact that you were arrested and embarrassed the league and embarrassed yourselves and embarrassed your team. I know that's going to have to be negotiated with the Players Association and probably with the teams, and there's going to be a lot of discussion, and already is a lot of discussion about it. But I think the league is on absolutely solid ground to have some sort of suspension for both players.
The other thing that is being said and also sort of goes with this conversation is, I've never been a person that wants to see somebody rush into a judgment. Do you think they're taking too long to address this? A lot of people that, you know, as Mel Greenberg wrote a great piece talking about how much of the outrage with Isaiah Thomas was coming from people that really didn't have much of a right to say something because they don't cover the league. I see a lot of that in this case, too, where everybody's saying that the WNBA isn't moving fast enough on this. Do you think that they're right to take this amount of time, or, you know, do they need to do something now?
I think I understand doing due diligence. What I have to question about with the situation with Brittany Griner and Glory Johnson is how much more diligence are they doing? I mean, what more do they need to, you know, we've heard the still gathering information. There's no more information that I know of to gather. We're pretty clear on what happened and where they are, both are in the legal process right now. Brittany, you know, is going through counseling and she's in a diversion program. So I don't know that there's any more information to gather. You've got a pretty clear picture of what happened. Now it seems to me like the only issue would be, you know, what you're talking with the Players Association and maybe I was talking with the individual franchises, but how long does that take? You know, to me, that situation is right now. I would think that should be resolved. And the other thing is sometimes I think all leagues sometimes do this. They don't like, you know, talking about, thinking about having to announce bad news. which suspensions are, but you know what? They don't get any easier if by waiting. And the issue is, I think the longer you wait, the more you open yourself up to criticism. So there is a line between moving too quickly and then a line between dragging your feet. I think at this point they've had sufficient time to gather information. So now it's a matter of, are they going to act?
You know, the only thing that's still out there that keeps in the back of my mind, and I agree with you, okay, let me say, is the fact that, you know, like you said, Brittany did plead guilty, but Glory's case is still out there. So do you punish her without knowing what a judge is going to say? I mean, what if she gets off? You know, then you punished her, and you know her people could say that she didn't deserve it, that she was not guilty. You know, I still would claim that it's going to, you know, you still got yourself arrested and you're still in the public eye and you still embarrassed everybody and you still deserve those games.
Exactly. And then what I think the league could say was, and maybe this is that they don't want to have this story in two separate news cycles, but, you know, the league could say, because Brittany's case has been, you know, I mean, that's been completed, if you will. She's, you know, she is in a diversion program. I think you know what the outcome is. There really isn't anything left about Brittany's case that's unclear,
right?
In terms of making a decision. But if they feel like they needed to wait until to see whether or not the charges, how exactly it's going to, you know, going to, you know, be finished in terms of Glory, and I think the hearing, I believe, is in June for her. You know, I guess if you wanted, I think you could say we're going to go ahead and hand out the punishment and say we're waiting for the other case to be resolved. And I can understand the idea, like, hey, we don't want to, again, we don't want to have this in two different news cycles. But you know what? I think people respect action. And being definitive more than, because the longer you wait, the more it seems like you're being wishy-washy and you know you're waffling and you're not taking a stance, and I think that ends up hurting the perception of the league.
I agree with you, and I do think that they need to make a decision, and I do think that it needs to come before camps open. I think that they need to make it this week, in my opinion. Now, the other thing that's going on that we got to talk about is we got to talk about who's playing and who's not playing. So we have no Taurasi for real. We have no Lauren Jackson officially, but we all knew that anyway. Parker, we don't know what we're getting. Fouls, no one knows if we're getting anything, and if so, where. We now know we're not having Janelle McCarville. We think we might be getting Asia Jones. So. And we no longer have Katie Douglas either, but at least that's somebody that just retired. So
exactly.
At least Connecticut can plan going forward. All of these other teams are sitting there saying, what do we do?
Yeah, it's one thing, you know, I talked to Cheryl Reeve in particular about this because, as you know, and I don't think it's any I think this was speculated by a lot of people, and I certainly have been – you know, a lot of people that I've talked to in the league have told me this, that Minnesota's the team that Sylvia Fowles wants to go to. We don't know that for sure. She's not saying. They're not saying. But we think that's where she wants to go. Well, I did talk to Cheryl Reeve about just this entire question of how you deal with players not playing, and for various reasons, either because they're worn out, you know, because in Sylvia's case, you know, she wants to force a trade. And she said, you know, this is just part of being in the league. You know, you have to have, you have to put your team together in a way that if you get rattled with different things happening, you're gonna suffer. I think that's easier said than done, though, because I think it can be very difficult when teams are kind of waiting really late in the process. Or in a case like LA, they don't know. They don't know for sure. you know, they'll say, well, you know, Candace is going to be out at the beginning of season. What's the beginning mean? You know, how long is the beginning going to last? And how, what is she going to base her decision on? Is she going to base her decision on, you know, hey, if they're playing really poorly, she might say, look, it's not worth my, I'm not coming back. I'm going to go ahead and take the rest of the summer off. Or would she be like, okay, they're playing poorly, so I need to go out there and help? I don't know. And she, you know, has just said, I need to take care of myself. I need a break. It's the right thing for me. So you're absolutely right in that it really does put these teams in a difficult spot in terms of what they know they can count on.
So then you take a look at things, and you know, with Minnesota at least, you know, Cheryl says that's part of being in the league. Well, it's real easy to say that when Maya Moore is on your team and Simone Augustus is on your team, and you know, Lindsay Whalen is on your team, and they're all locked in. But do you think that the Fowls trade sailed when Maya signed that contract? Is that why she was holding? Why they were holding up on signing that contract to see what the deal was that they had to work out?
That was something I speculated, and I imagine other people were doing the same thing. Not so much, I never got the sense, and no one in, you know, who was speaking to me, you know, unattributed, ever suggested that Maya wasn't going to come back. It was sort of how they were maybe going to structure things,
right,
for actually if Sylvia Fowles was in the fold. And so that does make you wonder if they just realized, okay, this is maybe not going to get done. Maybe this is going to be a stalemate, and Sylvia's not going to play this season, which would be a shame. But you can understand Chicago's, you know, point in this too, and I know, David, there's a lot of and for a long time now, there's been a lot of conversation about the core player designation, and if that's a good thing to have in the league, if it's a bad thing, how it slows down player movement, how it can kind of provoke stalemates, which in this case seems like it has. But I thought Sue Bird said something really very, very erudite about this, because she said, yeah, from a player standpoint, the core player designation, we don't like it. But she said, I understand why the league needs to have it for team's protection. So she said, it can't just be that we take the core player designation away entirely. She's like, other things have to change along with it. And that gets a little more complicated, but I think she's right, that there has to be some other ways that, at some point in a future collective bargaining agreement, unless this one gets amended, that for the betterment of the league and for the players, that probably that has to be at some point a little bit different system.
If they could put in something similar to the franchise tag in the NFL,
mm-hmm,
where you can mark, where you got them for a couple of years, you can do that. But then after a few, you can only do it, I think, twice. And then it's up to you to either work out a deal with the person, or, you know, you're going to have to do something. So, I mean, something like that, I think, would possibly work, you know, some slight modification of that. Because then at least you've got a couple of years that you're guaranteed that you have that person locked in, and then you got to make a decision as to get the best you can, or whatever the case may be. But, you know, it is still basketball. There's only a 12-player roster. And of those 12 players, anybody that's getting cored is player one or two, and that's really about it, unless you're Minnesota. You know, so how do you come up with a fair exchange for that, where, you know, suddenly Minnesota can't, you know, core Maya after 2 years of her eligibility for that spot, if they've done it? You know, and now she wants to walk, and Minnesota gets nothing for possibly the best player in the league. No, it's...
Yeah, that's a concern. And as we know, you know, the issue that's been with the league ever since the league started, which is how do you, you know, something that the NFL doesn't have to worry about. The NFL is the league. You know, they're not worried like, oh, somebody's going to sit out because they make more money, you know, playing over in NFL Europe.
Right.
And that's the issue that the WNBA has to deal with, is that economically they are not always going to be the prime suitor from a monetary standpoint. They're always going to be the prime suitor for American players and also, I think, for a lot of, you know, foreign players in terms of what league is the most respected and what do the players most enjoy. There's no question that they all most respect and enjoy the competition of the WNBA. But when it's not the prime suitor from a dollar standpoint, that's the situation we run into over and over again. And I don't see that being resolved anytime soon. So it really is, it really does make it difficult. And you mentioned, you know, let's specifically with Mayan Minnesota, you also have to look at how individual franchises are able to turn themselves into places that players want to be. You wouldn't have said that about Minnesota, you know, 10 years ago. You know, you wouldn't have said, oh, this is the place where players are and then they want to stay. They've turned themselves into that kind of franchise. And then it's going to be, you know, a situation where are other franchises that maybe don't have that kind of appeal to players, how do they compete in the league? And especially in a league where, as we know, because of core player, because of the salary cap and the salary structure, free agent moves are not anywhere near as easy, if you will, to get done as they can be in you know, in Major League Baseball or NFL or NBA. Those all can have their difficulties, but there's more player movement in those leagues.
And, you know, you look at things and you know, as you hope that the league becomes more profitable and things begin to move in the direction where they can choose other, you know, other directions to go to, instead of just staying here when their career starts to wind down or just choosing there as the career starts to wind down. But that's something that you're absolutely right. That is a big thing that the league will have to deal with. And as long as, you know, that money is out there, and now that, you know, you've had players taking time off from the WNBA to just play overseas. But this is the first time with Diana's case where we've actually just heard them say flat out, we are going to pay you to take the time off. And that's something that's a little tough to deal with for the WNBA.
It is. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be a situation where you say there's a whole lot of players that, you know, that are in that high a demand, have that kind of relationship, if you will, with overseas teams. But you don't need a whole lot of players for that to be the case where it's problematic. One thing I wrote about was, though, the idea, I think I called it a concern but not a crisis, because I think crisis would suggest like the league was really, really going to be battling to deal with this. I think it's more like it's like a chronic concern. It's like, you know, something that they just always have to deal with, and I'm not trying to minimize it, but I don't know that there's any answer. That, you know, we've all talked about this and thought about it and strategized about it, and somebody like Diana, she does love the WNBA, but she's also, you know, going to be, you know, 33 years old in June, and kind of like, hey, I've got to do this.
You know, as we go to put a wrap on this, kind of ironic, isn't it, that we started part of the conversation today talking about one of the dilemmas facing USA Basketball is these players are older and they've been there, and, you know, it's time to let the younger players. Yet, as we talk about the end, we're saying that Diana, who is one of those players, is also one of those few players that's so good still that she can get paid to sit home.
Yes. Yeah, and I don't think – I think that with Tarazi, I don't know that there's a – you know, I don't think anyway. There's a lot of – I mean, I don't think there's much question that she is, you know, a national team – you know, on the national team probably until she doesn't want to be anymore. Or unless we have some really precipitous drop-off in her game, which I don't see. I mean, let's face it, last year she could have been the league MVP. Mm-hmm. And some people probably thought she should have been. But she was right there with Maya in terms of everything she did for the team. And she won another championship. So, the one thing I would say, because I always like to, try to find the silver lining in anything, is a lot of these are issues that just come with being a professional sports league. And the longer a professional sports league is in existence, a lot of times more things come up. I mean, you and I both are old enough to remember when free agency, hit baseball. And remember, people thought, oh, my gosh, this is going to kill baseball. It's just going to be a disaster. It didn't happen. It made things more complicated. It affected player movement a lot. It affected the way I think sometimes fans feel about their teams. But it just became a part of the fabric of the game. And I think that's similar with the WNBA. The longer the league's in existence, sometimes the more issues come up that the league has to deal with.
Yeah, but it's also meant that I have to root for Alex Rodriguez if I'm rooting for the Yankees. I mean, that's not fair.
No, it's not. I can feel your pain on that one. Because believe me, if he was playing for the Cardinals, I would just be like, ah! It would be difficult. But it is, again, I think, and I don't want to sound like Pollyanna on that either. I mean, everything we talked about are serious issues. But, it is, I think, an inevitable part of growth means complication.
Yes. Yes, I guess so. So from that aspect, we will end on a positive note that things are so screwed up right now that it's got to be a great sign.
Maybe so, yeah. Well, and also, I think all of us are, and it was funny because I talked to several players that said this. Everybody's really looking forward to some games starting, just to be able to talk about, our the Women's Basketball World's normal arguments about, just games and players and coaching strategies and who's on the hot seat and all that stuff. I think everybody's really eager to be able to talk about that stuff right now.
Absolutely. This is one year where I wish things didn't start later. Michelle, thank you again for taking time with us. It's always great to talk with you and catch up. And, we love reading your stuff on ESPNW, and we look forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Thank you, I appreciate it.